All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Dependence on fossil fuels is quite literally reaching a boiling point. If you've even stepped outside this year, you know what I'm talking about. And while the likes of electric vehicles and solar power are among essential alternatives, a whole ready available solution to our carbon dependence can sometimes feel like fiction. But according to some, like Eric, my husband, who is also a former nuclear submarine engineer, the answer exists, although it's often vilified. Our ongoing conversation about nuclear energy got a boost when Maddie Hilly, founder of the Campaign for a Green Nuclear Deal, took to Twitter to dispel some myths around nuclear waste. Rather than a problem, Hilly, like Eric, considers this waste the best solution we have to meet both our energy needs while also protecting the environment. Today, Eric and I are discussing common misconceptions around nuclear waste as well as its potential to power our planet. Hey, Good Together listeners. So this is going to be a really interesting episode. And one of the reasons why it's going to be interesting, other than the fact we're talking about a topic that is very, you know, newsworthy and, you know, ripe for myth busting, things like that, is because I have a very special guest today. The guest is actually my husband, Eric. Welcome, Eric.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, listeners, you're probably like, why is she having her husband on this podcast? The answer is because, you know, so a little bit of background. So Eric and I met in high school. We are high school sweethearts. I know, a little bit ridiculous, but we both were on the swim team. He was obviously much better than me. And anyway, we kind of, you know, have grown up together. I went to the University of Texas. Eric actually got recruited to the Naval Academy. He was a swimmer there. And later he actually went to become a submarine officer. And if you're not familiar with the way our submarines work, they actually have little nuclear reactors on the submarines that have to be operated by the guys on the submarines. So Eric like literally had to go through so much schooling and like really, really deeply understands, from my perspective, like nuclear reactors more than I even think like truly academics have. Like literally he would be on a submarine for like months at a time. I wouldn't get to talk to him, which was terrible. I mean, this was when he was actually in the military. fast forward to now, he's no longer in the military. He works in tech, specifically at Dropbox. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Eric, I think it would be cool to just like kind of introduce the concept, or like maybe how you feel like first of all, also before he talks, he's literally been pushing back on me recording this podcast with him forever. He keeps saying like he's not quote unquote the expert. And I was like, yes, you are in some ways. Like, you don't have a PhD in nuclear physics, but like, wait, why don't you tell the listeners about like how you had to go through this like crazy interview process, like when you were in school, like you had to like write physics problems on a whiteboard. Like, what, tell them a little bit like how you got into the program.
Sure. Yeah. So there's like a long history of, it's basically testing people's like ability to handle stress. And so they throw technical problems at you and see how you can respond. It's, you know, physics, calculus, that type of stuff on a whiteboard with like an actual naval reactors engineer who, you know, is incredibly smart on this. I will, you know, you're like, you are not as, you might be more qualified than an academic. I would say largely not. Like, we learned how to use a naval nuclear propulsion plant. We understood the high level principles of nuclear physics and whatnot. I went through about between 18 months and 2 years of schooling on how it all works. Versus a PhD nuclear physicist is going through about a dozen years and probably knows quite a bit more. But I mean, I understand how the Navy does nuclear power. And I have the experience of, you know, being close to an operating reactor for a lot of time.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, guys, he literally myth busts things all the time. Now, granted, he is a very frightening person to watch like a Chernobyl documentary with, because I probably know entirely too much about that. But I think, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to record this podcast is there is a lot of like fear and I think misunderstanding about like the way a nuclear reactor works, what's actually done with the waste at the end of the day. And then also, I was super surprised to understand about the safety. Our military takes a lot of thought into the way they expose people into these situations, right? Like, it's not like they're just throwing you guys in front of something that we're all really scared about and you're going to grow a fifth arm, right?
Correct. Like, and especially, so the Navy regulates its own nuclear power program separately from the Department of Energy. And so the Navy takes it super seriously.
Yes.
Safety, our training, it's very, very strict because we want to maintain that control. It allows us to safely operate nuclear reactors in foreign ports across the world without people thinking two things about it. When a submarine shows up in, you know, Korea, they're not like, ooh, it's...
Yeah, they're not scared.
Yeah,
it's not like,
scared.
Oh, here's like a mini...
We have a record of good safety over the last, you know, 75 years.
Yeah, here's like a mini Chernobyl pulling up into the dock. Like, they would be like throwing things at you, like, get out of here. So obviously, I think that's an interesting perspective. But yeah, like, I guess bringing it back and kind of like setting the stage, you know, when we talk about nuclear energy, you and I have been saying for a long time that this is really... Now, right now, it's an unpopular ticket out of the carbon emissions black hole, but, you know, we can talk about why that's unpopular. But I wonder if you can, like, to start with, like, the getting rid of the fear, I think, because I think most of the time fear comes from, like, lack of knowledge and understanding. Like, why don't we, like, talk a little bit about, like, what a nuclear reactor is and why it's a really good, quote unquote, clean energy source? Like, Tell me a little bit about like what goes on from an energy, you know, generation perspective.
Sure. So a fission reactor like we had on the submarine, it's essentially just a hot rock that creates steam, and then you use the steam to do work. So it's the same as you'd see a steam, you know, a traditional steam boiling plant. You just use, instead of using coal or a gas turbine or something to create the heat, use, you know, nuclear energy from, you know, the fissioning of uranium atoms.
Okay. And so, you know, obviously this is the process that can kind of go forever, right? Like there's fuel rods and stuff. So tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah. And so there's a little bit of difference between civilian nuclear power and the Navy, in that the Navy enriches uranium to a much higher percentage. So the reactor lasts a very long time. My submarine lasted about 20 years, and then they refuel it once. So you get about 20 years of fuel from what amounts to not much more than about a briefcase's worth of uranium. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider the amount of coal that would be required to produce that kind of, I mean, we're talking about millions of...
very large submarine, you know, 565 feet and incredibly powerful, all being driven off of about a suitcase worth of fuel.
That's really interesting.
For 20 years.
For 20 years, yeah. I mean, so we can, listeners, we can kind of imagine what the amount of coal would be required to do something like that. And, you know, obviously that's kind of crazy. But so I'm not that familiar with like how uranium is mined. Like, where does uranium come from?
Yeah, so uranium comes in different isotopes. 238, uranium-238 is the common isotope, but within 238, there's a small percentage of uranium-235, which is what people want for fuel.
Okay.
So the process is get a bunch of rocks that has a little bit of uranium-238 in it,
yep.
Put it through centrifuges and create and spin out the uranium-235, and then enrich that, you know, continue putting through centrifuges and getting more and more uranium-235. That's where they talk about enrichment.
Oh,
I think civilian nuclear power goes to roughly 10%. The Navy goes much higher than that.
Okay. That's really interesting. And yeah, like when we were doing some research, or I was doing some research for this podcast, you know, and of course Eric helped, but we were looking at this. And yeah, I mean, so typically what happens is, yeah, they make these metal tubes called fuel rods from the uranium. And typically more than 200 of these rods get bundled together to form what's called a fuel assembly. And then the fuel rods inside the reactor are immersed in water, which, you know, is, you know, acting as both a coolant and a moderator. So anyway, I find that super interesting. You're saying that roughly on your submarine, those fuel rods lasted for about 20 years. And then what happens? I think this is where I think everybody could kind of get behind this first process where it's like, cool, this seems like a pretty clean process. We know that the mining isn't great, and mining in general across all industries needs to have, you know, better oversights and things like that. But let's pretend like we could, you know, solve the mining perspective. I think the bigger thing that freaks people out is like the quote unquote nuclear waste. Like we all have seen like cartoons where there's like, you know, like I'm joking, but you know, people with different arms and, you know, like five arms, or we've heard of, you know, the horror stories of what happens when, you know, a reactor blows up and stuff is released into the atmosphere. Sure. So yeah, like let's talk about the, like what happens after that.
Sure. So, fuel is oftentimes stored in cement casks that are then immersed in water. It doesn't take a tremendous amount of material to shield this nuclear waste to make
it. And why
did
tell them about shielding? Like, why do you have to shield that? This is interesting, right? Because it's degrading, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's decaying into, you know, less and less radioactive isotopes over time, but it's giving off energy in the form of, you know, photons, gamma, neutrons, etc. These things need to be slowed down with water, with any material is going to slow it down. And if you slow it down enough to a point where it doesn't cause harm to your cells anymore, but it doesn't take a tremendous amount.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, when Eric would come home from work on during times where he wasn't actively deployed, he like literally had this little, like it looked like a cassette tape on him. That was like a little mini, what was it called? It was like measuring how much you were exposed to all the time. Like, you know, of the exposed of what, like what's the right term?
Yeah. So it was checking for ionizing radiation. So it's basically checking like if this little,
cassette tape thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a little monitor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that gets, and I can't remember the name of the thing.
That's okay.
Well,
it's fine.
Look that up.
We'll figure out what the name is, folks. We'll put it in the show notes. It's okay. Like I said, this is an interesting conversation.
We call it a TLD, but I can't remember exactly what that stood for. But it's basically, you know, let's say a gamma ray goes through this little window in this little cassette tape that you're wearing on your waist, it counts that. And then based on the number of times it's been hit by, you know, high energy, like radiation, you can interpret how much radiation your body got during that period of time. So we wore one of those on our waist at all times, anytime we're on the submarine. So they're very closely monitoring our dosing. And what was super interesting was we would get a lot more radiation actually when we're in port, just from, you know, natural cosmic radiation that's hitting everybody all the time.
Yeah.
From the sun and from suns from all over the, you know, stars all over the place. We would actually get a lot more radiation then than when we're underway underwater because we were, you know, underwater, and all the shielding from the ocean water was shielding us from most of those cosmic rays. So we're only exposed to the radiation coming off of the reactor.
And but, it was less
but
than...
with all the shielding that the Navy puts into our reactor, like, it was negligible.
Now, that is crazy, listeners. Like, I don't know if you caught that. We're going to, like, probably pull this out from a soundbite. But, yeah, I mean, I think that we, in general, don't understand, underestimate, et cetera, the amount of radiation that we're all exposed to on a daily basis from the sun and stars and everything.
From
like
bananas. From,
yeah, from bananas.
Pretty much everything is emitting radiation at some level.
Okay, so don't freak out. That's a little bit scary. Don't throw away your bananas. No, I'm just kidding. That's really funny. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is like really big myth-busting perspective that I've always found to be really interesting. And I also remember, like, looking at that little cassette tape thing and asking Eric, and like, I'm like, well, I don't know what this, what the amount is that you're measuring. And I remember he'd always be like, oh my God, like the Navy is like obsessed with these with us. Like, we have to wear them constantly. And
it was a very big deal. If you did not wear yours, it was a big smackdown.
And I also think that, you know, just the fact that the Navy was so, like, you know, just really, really wanted to make sure they were taking care of their people appropriately. Like, I think we all can understand, like, governments and militaries, et cetera. Like, in my mind, we can debate about how, like, effective they are. But I'm like, you know, if they care this much about their folks, like, you can bet that, like, as this happens in the private sector, it's even better. Like, that's kind of what I think, just because of, you know, civilian, like, liability and stuff that. So from my perspective, I think this is really, really encouraging. And so we kind of went into a little different area, but bringing us back to, like, the actual, like the waste, sure, and like the waste disposal. So one of the things I thought was really interesting, like, just throwing some statistics out here. So right now, there are more than 440 commercial reactors worldwide, including 92 in the United States, which, again, is one of the largest sources of reliable carbon-free electricity available. It's super, again, reliable, it's predictable, and it's a very, like, potent energy source, like, yep, we were just talking about. Like, and so because uranium, these fuel rods we're talking about, are very energy dense, the volume of waste is relatively small. We talked, yep, about, it's like, you know, Eric was giving us the briefcase analogy for a submarine. And when there's a very big submarine, I went on it, I was kind of blown away by how big it was, but then also, like, small when you got in there, the actual place. But anyway, so just giving us another, like, visualization, when we talk about, like, how small the volume of waste actually is. So we found this interesting statistic that said, all of the fuel rods ever used by the commercial nuclear industry since the late 1950s could actually fit on a single football field stacked about 50 feet high. So, like, that's pretty crazy. I mean, like, that's a very, you know, that's how many years ago? Like, 60, 70, like, that's a long time. And from my perspective, I, you know, if we're talking about getting away from, you know, coal and gas and, you know, being able to do it from a relatively responsible perspective, I think it's really interesting.
Absolutely. Like, you're basically concentrating waste in a very, you know, tight space versus, you know, most of our traditional dense energy coming from gas turbines or coal power, any of that stuff. You're basically just sending your waste throughout the whole earth.
Yeah.
So it's like, would you rather contain all of your waste, which, ooh, it's scary waste, it's nuclear waste, but it's very well contained in a small space, or just kind of let it go throughout the whole earth? I think I'd rather know exactly where my waste is.
Yeah, that's true. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting, I didn't know about fuel rods, is so when fuel rods are done in the reactor, over 90% of that potential energy from the uranium is actually still left in them. Did mm-hmm. you know that?
Yeah.
I mean, I would think you knew that, but that's kind of crazy to me. So what happens? Do people get to reuse these?
Yeah, things? Absolutely. Yeah. I think other countries, I'm not sure if the United States has a big program for recycling nuclear fuel, because obviously there's a big contamination concern once you get into those fuel rods.
Oh, okay.
But it is done in other countries. I think Europe does it. I think Japan does it. Because, yeah, you can extract a lot of this, you know, very energy dense, very expensive to create material into new fuel rods.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then, so we, you know, at the top of the episode, when I was doing the intro, we talked about this, like, Twitter thread, which we're linking to in the show notes. But I think it was funny, like, there was, you know, a bunch of myths getting busted about nuclear waste. Like, so we've kind of already talked about them, but I'm going to go through this list because I thought it was funny. So like, yes, nuclear waste is not glowing green goo like we've seen in cartoons. It's solid. It's very small. It's tiny compared to the waste from all the other energy technologies we talked about. Easily contained. And then this is interesting. It says it, quote unquote, has a perfect safety record. So what does that mean? Like a perfect safety record from dealing with the fuel rods?
I would assume where it's referring to.
It's from the Twitter thread. I mean,
perfect safety record is people haven't been harmed by the waste of nuclear fuel. We store them in, you know, I think big cement casks, which are then immersed in pools of water.
Yeah.
And even if you were to swim in those pools, like, unless you're like right next to the fuel, which is, you know, probably 50 feet on the ground or below ground, you're not going to get any radiation. So it's just very safe.
Okay. And so, I mean, that's really interesting. So tell me a little bit about like the scary stuff though. Like what happened with the Chernobyl or, you know, situations where, you know, people and the environment were harmed from a nuclear reactor? Like, can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, what was happening?
Sure. Well, there's
in a really simplistic perspective.
There's obviously a lot of different designs for nuclear power plants. Yeah. The Navy, the United States and most of the world, and I believe even Russia at this point, uses a very safe technology for nuclear power that has a negative coefficient of reactivity of water. So as this hot rock, the nuclear reactor, as it gets hotter, it gets less reactive. So that kind of it's like a negative feedback loop that prevents the reactor from going supercritical and causing, you know, basically flashing the water to steam and creating a big boom. That's, you know, that was ultimately what happens at Chernobyl.
Okay.
You want to keep that core covered with water all the time. If it's not, it causes problems.
And they didn't. Yeah, that was it, right? They didn't have the cool water happening or...
They were doing some testing that obviously would never happen in a modern nuclear power plant. Really pressing their plant and made some operational mistakes that caused their core to come uncovered.
And obviously those operational mistakes are like drilled into your head when you're studying right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, God.
Well, I mean, the reactor I was operating on, we couldn't do, it would be impossible. It was designed differently. Mm. And there were so many automatic safety features in place that it would be impossible for us to get to that spot. But at the same time, we're all trained on how to deal with all these different casualties.
Even if it started
happening.
Even if
all your systems were to go down.
Okay.
Like, there's like many, many layers of safety.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I think that's the key is like, we obviously, if you know, to build nuclear power plants, you have to build them in a inherently safe manner.
Like idiot proof.
Yeah.
You know, like,
you get the smartest people to operate them, but then you build them in a way that even if those smartest people make mistakes, that it doesn't cause a disaster.
Well, that was like what, so when I told you guys earlier, he was a terrifying person to watch the Chernobyl stuff with. That's actually not really true. I mean, I think there's some parts like where when they were showing the worst case scenario, that's where it was terrifying because I was like, you know, when you're seeing like the impact on the environment, I was like, oh, surely it's not that bad, right? And he's like, oh yeah, it is. Cause he knows like about what could actually happen. But he also was a very reassuring person to watch this with because of what he just talked about, which is like when you watch, was it called Chernobyl? Which is the one I'm thinking of? It was on Netflix.
I think so.
But yeah, like when you watch the show, it's for somebody that isn't familiar with like how these reactors work. Even the show I felt like did a decent job at showcasing like how they went wrong, like in so many ways. Like there were
you have to make five, many, many
yeah,
mistakes.
Yeah. There were like five different levels of like fucking up, pardon the French, you know, where then it finally all resulted in this meltdown. It was
to back that up, they had a inherently unsafe, or not, I can't say unsafe. They had a design that required operator action to keep the plant safe.
Yeah.
And they didn't take that action.
So there was all these things and then they didn't do that. And it was watching that show, you can kind of see the drama behind it because there's like that one guy who's like, oh no, like they didn't do all this stuff. So he's like, anyway, it's a very interesting show. I would tell you to watch it if you're curious about some of the stuff that we brought up. But again, it's also going to freak you out because it's an example of like something that's not going to happen again. Like it's literally, I mean, it's not with all of the, you know, all of the safety measures that are, you know, happening now. And, you know, it's certainly, certainly not going to happen again in my perspective. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we've kind of talked about like, you know, I mean, I think you've done a really good job about explaining this technology to, you know, what they used to have those books like Blank for Dummies. I feel like this is like nuclear energy for dummies, and I'm calling myself the dummy listener, so you are not. And so I feel like I've come away with, even after doing the research, I feel like I have a better understanding of what's going on. But to kind of close things out, I'm curious for us to talk a little bit about like, there's something called the Campaign for a Green Nuclear Deal. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these goals, and I'd love you to kind of react, Eric, like if you feel like these seem realistic. So in summary, the Campaign for a Green Nuclear Deal basically says, quote unquote, it is a nationwide advocacy effort to articulate a new vision for nuclear growth as a way to regain American industrial capabilities and create dignified jobs in clean energy and manufacturing. So for me, that statement is saying not only, you know, could we utilize this, you know, nuclear energy for like just pure, you know, consumer consumption. It's like they're trying to talk about it from a manufacturing perspective. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because obviously it takes very smart people to operate these plants. It takes very like the best welders to weld these, you know, the welds in a nuclear power plant have to be perfect. So you get this level of welding that is...
We don't have it anymore.
And if you let that skill set decay, with like, unfortunately, we kind of have in this country, it's hard to get that back. It takes a long time to train up a workforce that knows how to weld a nuclear power plant.
Yeah. I mean, so that's like really interesting. And yeah, I mean, so part of this is, you know, part of the tenets of this deal is education specifically,
Absolutely.
Like education and creation of jobs in the event that more reactors actually come online. So I think Eric made a really good point. It's not just like everybody has to go to school to be a nuclear engineer. It's like there's so many related jobs, crossover jobs, like people that know how to weld, probably a lot of like concrete people. Sounds like there's a lot of concrete that's needed and, you know, and stuff of that nature and like, you know, like facility type engineering and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, really,
I mean, there's but my first job out of the Navy was working for Facebook and data centers. And there's a very strong pipeline between, you know, operators of nuclear power plants and running data centers. There's a lot of crossover in that critical facility mindset that's favorable in a lot of different industries. So it's just, you're creating, you know, good jobs that attract, you know, smart people.
That's awesome. And, you know, another part of the plan is, you know, they're really advocating to grow the share of U.S. electricity from nuclear power to 50% by 2050, which, you know, that's a big goal, especially it seems kind of hard to think about considering our current infrastructure. But, you know, in addition to helping with the education and job creation, like we just talked about, they're also, you know, looking to protect existing nuclear plants. It says America's fleet of nuclear power plants is our largest source of carbon-free energy, and it provides almost 20% of the country's electricity. So I guess if we're trying to go from 20 to 50%, it's a little bit better than I thought. We're not going to 0 to 50%. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah. And I mean, 2050 is obviously a long time. There are other technologies. We're talking about fission right now, which is, you know, that's the nuclear power of the last, you know, 70 years. There's also, you know, fusion. It's a different technology. It takes a different type of fuel. It's, you know, basically takes, it has an limitless fuel. It's creates a lot more energy. It takes a little bit more, you know, it's been a tough cookie to crack, if you will, for us to get this technology right. But there's a lot of promising work in the fusion space happening by, you know, it takes governments working together to harness this technology. That, you know, I feel like if fusion takes off, like that's our ultimate source of clean energy, that you don't even have the problems with this waste that we're talking about. It's just like highly dense nuclear energy.
And it just, it doesn't create waste. Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, hey, like I should have to do a whole separate episode on that one, but that's really interesting. So yeah, listeners, we'll link to that in the show notes, and yeah, maybe we will do a separate episode because I don't want to confuse people, but you know, I don't want them to like listen to this episode and be like, oh, it doesn't create, you know, the current systems don't create waste. So like separate, but also very promising technology. Very cool. And then, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of those were the main points we wanted to cover. I think just to kind of close out the episode, like we do, you know, we'd like to leave people with actionable tips in terms of, you know, being able to kind of move forward with some of this knowledge. So I think like first tip I would have is just learning a little bit more about the space and like trying to not default back to that like old mindset of like being scared of this, you know, of this technology, and really seeing it as a necessity for, you know, maintaining life as we know it, from an energy perspective without having to continually utilize, fossil fuels. Like, it's just, if we are to not have nuclear energy and not have fossil fuels, what are we going to use? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. there's geothermal, there's, you know, wind energy,
yeah, solar and wind is solar, great, but it's yeah. just, you know, they obviously, if the wind's not blowing, you're yep. not getting energy from, you know, wind power.
And climate change has worked, you know, is wreaking havoc on weather patterns. So, yeah, I mean, just there's just a lot of like unknowns. So I think nuclear energy as a part of that puzzle is really important.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of like changing misconceptions. So like, in addition to having people like you listeners listen to this and start to kind of change our mindset, I think there's also, you know, ways that we as a society can open up a little bit more. Like, for instance, in the Netherlands have literally like opened up certain nuclear energy facilities, and there's like an educational museum in there. There's like art installations and like hands-on type, you know, exhibits where people can like show up and like understand what's going on. I mean, I think that's a good idea, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
I think they let people walk around where they have these spent fuel rods.
Really?
In the
Netherlands?
In the pools.
Wow.
And you can be like, yeah, you can walk right around and you can measure how much radiation you're getting from that spot. And it's negligible. It's just like, people need to understand that's not this super scary thing. Yeah. You can't see it. You aren't going to see the radiation, but it's not there. Like,
yeah.
we just need, it's all about education. People are afraid of stuff
what
they don't
know.
Understand.
Yeah.
It's just like anything else.
Yeah.
So just more educational, people will understand it and, you know, be willing to, this is, you know, talk to your congressman, talk to your senator. Like, we want more nuclear power, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, mine too. And yeah, listeners, like I said, I got a chance to go on Eric's submarine. I was like blown away at just the whole functionality of the thing. But yes, I mean, like I didn't feel afraid when I was walking around. Obviously they didn't let us anywhere near the reactor there, or, you know, the missiles. Yes. Yes. They're, you know, that was a thing. But they did not let us anywhere near that. But anyway, like I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Eric, I know you were like a little nervous about joining us. I think you did a great job.
Well, thank you.
And, yeah, I'd love to have you back talking a little bit more about this. But yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.